Lord, as we've heard and now we set out to hear some more from Scripture, we together ask now that your word would be our soul guide, your spirit our soul teacher, and your glory and our transformation our dual purpose. Amen. Well, we're in the midst of a mini-series on worship. It's really on loving God. We've seen that the most important calling, the most important responsibility for a follower of Jesus Christ is to love God. And the way we love God, the focused way in the Scriptures, is by worshiping Him. He and He alone demands our worship. And we've been talking about the book of Revelation. A couple weeks ago, we saw heavenly worship in the book of Revelation. And we're going to look even more today at Revelation. Revelation is a book that a lot of times causes us difficulty. Many people either take Revelation and they just ignore it. It's just too much. It's just too wild for me. Or others become so fascinated with it that sometimes it's almost all they look at in Scripture. We want to have a healthy view, a healthy relationship to the book of Revelation. And what we're going to see, I hope, we began to see it a couple weeks ago. Hopefully this morning it'll become clearer. Is an approach to Revelation that makes it much more meaningful in our lives than oftentimes it has been, and I think easier to see what God is doing in the book of Revelation. So there's a lot to cover. It's going to raise probably this morning as many questions as it is going to provide answers, but that's okay as you pursue these issues. It's a bit different, maybe, than much popular understanding of the book of Revelation, but I think it's fairly clear in the text, and you need to know that there's kind of an emerging consensus among scholars that this is the best way to read the book of Revelation, although when you come to Revelation, everybody has a little bit different reading because there's so much in it. So I'm not suggesting that everybody says exactly the same thing on every verse. But this overall approach, a couple things we've already seen is that, number one, the book of Revelation is meant to be dealt with in one setting. It's meant the whole thing, and especially hearing it. So you've got to keep that in mind, and there's no better way, no better thing to do if you really want to understand Revelation than to listen to it. All at once. It's much clearer that way. And we've seen as well a couple weeks ago that Revelation is a different kind of literature. That's one of the things that makes it so difficult for us. It's a kind of literature that existed in the first century. It's called apocalyptic. It really doesn't exist anymore in the way that it was then. And we saw a couple weeks ago that apocalyptic literature is characterized by a couple things. One is it's characterized by God giving visions. So God shows John, the revelator here, he shows him a bunch of things. And in the showing, it's audio as well as visual. So he hears and sees. So watch that. Second thing is apocalyptic literature always has the theme that God is going to break into human history and set things right. Apocalyptic literature is given in situations of difficulty. And it comes especially to the Jews through these centuries of, while they serve the one God in the world who's the creator and the king of the world, they're ruled by foreign pagan powers. It begins in 722 BC with Assyria. It goes Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, and now Rome. Five pagan foreign powers have ruled over the Jews and the Holy Land for most of 800 years. And so this is a kind of literature that developed in that context. And then we saw that apocalyptic literature is characterized by symbols, and especially animals, numbers, and colors. So whenever you see a number or an animal in the book of Revelation, it's almost for sure a symbol, a picture, a word picture for something. So here we go. Based on that, we're going to look some more. And remember, we're thinking about worship. Revelation has become one of my favorite books because I think it's so powerful for us today if we really see what's going on. Now remember, the book of Revelation, this is important, we talked about this a bit, but it needs to be underlined this morning, is addressed to seven literal, historical, real churches. Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. It's addressed to real churches. That's so important for us to remember. Real churches of Asia, it was called then, it's modern-day Turkey. I think we might have a map here. There's the map. You can see the seven churches there on the screen. And you can see Greece. And if you could see, if we had more, you can see over here is Italy and Rome. And the Roman Empire goes further to the west. It's kind of the civilized world of the day, the Western world. And the whole thing is there. And it's in the 90s. We're pretty confident it's in the 90s of the first century. But Revelation is for real people of the day. It's not written to the people who are alive at the end of history when Jesus is coming back. That's the way we often treat the book. But it was written to seven real churches who were in a real situation that was very challenging. And they needed to hear these words. They were living in a hostile environment. There was persecution and pressure coming from the powers of evil on the churches. And this has a lot to do with the Roman Empire and the Roman Emperor. And also the Greco-Roman gods and religious groups of the day. So there's a lot of pagan pressure, and especially coming now in the 90s, most powerfully yet from the Roman Emperor. This emperor was named Domitian, and he, more than any other Roman emperor, was demanding that people worship him as God. And now you just think, put yourself as a Christian in the first century, and the head of this powerful world empire trying to get you, and not just the emperor, but a lot of pressure from the whole culture that you're to worship the emperor and the empire. And there were lots of pressures. We can see there was religious pressure, there was moral pressure, because they had a certain kind of sinful lifestyle that went along with this. There's economic pressure. That's one of the things that the mark of the beast is about. The mark of the beast is an economic thing. If you get the mark, you can do certain economic things, and if you don't, you're persecuted economically. There are social pressures. There's ostracism. If you don't follow these things, there's political pressure coming from the head of the government and the government sources. And it's beginning to rise. And Asia Minor, interestingly, even though you've got Italy over here where Rome is and where the emperor lives, the place in the whole Roman Empire where there was more pressure to worship the emperor is in these seven cities here. And these seven cities are kind of competing with each other to be the best host to emperor worship. So you have, this is the setting that John writes to. And John himself, we saw in chapter 1, he is in exile because of his faithfulness and his refusal to worship the emperor and to follow those kinds of things. So the book of Revelation is about Christians under persecution, and the Revelation talks about there's more to come, and there was more to come. It hadn't reached its high point yet in the 90s. It's going to get worse. And it's really a book that talks about how to live as Christians in such tough circumstances. When you really look at the book of Revelation, it does not give much help at all to us about when Jesus is going to come. It doesn't tell us about that. It says he's coming. And it may be awfully difficult right now, but days are coming when God is going to reign. And we're going to see that as we move through it. Now, here's another piece to help understand the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation, it kind of moves, and how do you understand? The big picture is important. So I want to throw the big picture up here and talk about it a little bit. Here's what happens in the book of Revelation. I call it kind of the movement of the Revelation drama. And it begins with an introduction, chapter 1. We looked at that a couple weeks ago. And then there are seven letters to the seven churches where Jesus speaks to these seven churches, seven different individual churches with seven messages from the exalted Jesus. And then we saw, and we looked pretty in detail at this, there's worship in heaven in the fourth and fifth chapters. And you can see how different worship in heaven is. And featured in this are the 24 elders and the four living creatures, remember. They become key characters in the book of Revelation. Then you come across seven seals and then seven trumpets. And then what I call a centerpiece drama in chapters 12 to 14. And then seven plagues and seven bowls. And then the judgment and the fall of Babylon. And Babylon is symbolic for Rome. See, this book, if he just said Rome, he might get in trouble with the authorities. But it's very clear to them, and it's almost unanimous among scholars that study Revelation, Babylon means Rome. It's the Roman Empire and the judgment is coming. And then in verses 19 and 20, chapter 19 and 20, there's the final judgment. And then in 21 and 22, the consummated kingdom. Okay, now, when you look at this, the seven seals, the seven trumpets, and the seven plagues. The hardest part of Revelation really to understand is chapters 6 through 18. The first five chapters are easy to understand, and then when it picks up in chapter 19, it's a little easier to understand. But 6 to 18 are the most difficult things. And the seven seals, the seven trumpets, and the seven plagues and bowls, again, there's an emerging consensus on this is, it's not first you have the seals and then you have the trumpets and then you have the plagues, but they all three are talking about the same period of time, and they're just talking about it from a different perspective. So it's kind of recapitulation. It's kind of a retelling of the story. It's repeating it in different terms and images. Maybe there's some telescoping where it gets a little bit closer to the end in some of these. And you can see that all three of these emphasize the coming judgment of God upon sin and evil. And then you have three of them emphasizing what's going to come is serious judgment from God. And then you have in 17 to 18 a picture of God's judgment on Rome. And then in 19 and 20, you have a clear picture of the final judgment of all humanity. So when you see these five different sections, seals, trumpets, plagues and bowls, Rome, and the final judgment, you see how judgment is a major theme. God's judgment is a major theme in the book of Revelation. God's judgment is coming. Now, I want to talk just for a minute about the centerpiece drama. Because the centerpiece drama, I think, is the center of the book. And it is. the center of the book as you move through it, but it's the key. And if you see in chapter 12, there is a war in heaven. And then the war in heaven spills over to earth. So there's a war going on earth between the forces of evil and God and his forces of good. So we live in a world where the forces of evil and the forces of God are at odds with each other. And key characters are introduced in chapters 12, 13, and 14. Jesus, the church, and versus the devil and the beast, which is Rome, and the false prophet, or the second beast, which serves Rome. And if you see, you can see that in 12 and 13. See the story. So there's kind of an evil triumvirate of Satan, the beast, and the first beast is the beast from the sea, which is Rome, and then the beast from the earth, which is kind of like almost a propaganda machine for the beast from the earth, from Rome. So you get all of that happened. The devil is behind it all. And you can see in 12:9 this devil defined. This serpent of old, who's called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, he was thrown down to earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. And there's a battle, there's a war, first in heaven and now on earth. So that helps them to understand where they're at, the Christians in these seven churches. Okay, now, if I think the chapters 12 through 14 are the key to understanding the book, even more, I have come up with two verses that I think are the centerpiece to understanding the book of Revelation. I think the keys to understanding Revelation are chapter 14, verses 6 and 7. I want to look at these with you. So, there's this war going on in heaven now, and John sees, God keeps showing him things. He sees another angel flying in mid-heaven. Now, this angel has an eternal gospel to preach to those who live on the earth. So there's a gospel. We know about the gospel. But in the midst of this huge conflict on earth, there is the good news to be proclaimed to those who are on earth, to every nation, tribe, tongue, and people. The gospel is for everybody. So mission is key. In the midst of this battle, an angel comes proclaiming the gospel, and all through the book of Revelation, a very important role of the church is to be a witness. The witness. And there are two witnesses, two key witnesses that kind of symbolize the witness of the church. So in the midst of all this, one of the things the church is to be is a witness to the gospel, even though it may be difficult. Now here, verse 7 kind of brings it to a head, I think, the theme of Revelation. If I had to pick one verse, this would be the verse I would pick. This angel says, here's the way he preaches the gospel. He says, "Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made the heaven and the earth and the sea." So here's the God. Fear God. Give him glory. Worship him. The book of Revelation is a call to worship the one true God in the midst of the evil battle that the church faces in this world. That's what it is. That's the heart of Revelation. No matter how difficult it gets, no matter how tough it is, no matter if it seems that you're losing, you fear God, you give God glory, and you worship him. That's the key. And these Christians are having all kinds of pressure, persecution, to abandon God, or to have God and the emperor as their foci of worship. But no, fear God, give him glory, worship him. And notice, fear God, worship him, because the hour of his judgment is come. See, this is future yet, but this is what we need to understand. And this is what Revelation, this whole theme of judgment is. God has been patient. He's put off judgment. He keeps putting it off, but it's coming. Judgment is coming. This is the book, certainly way more than any other New Testament book. And I think I would even want to argue more than any book in the Bible that presents to us a full doctrine of the judgment of God. You know, it's all three of the sevens, and then the judgment of Rome, and then the final judgment. It's a book that God's judgment, which he's been patient, he's kept his, he hasn't come in and judged sin the way you'd think he would, but it's coming. It may look like you're losing now, but the God who made heaven and earth and sea is to be worshipped, and his judgment is coming. Then it's put negatively in as chapter 14 goes on, if anyone worships the beast in his image. So see, the Roman Empire, this is the beast. The Roman Empire is putting pressure on people to worship him, the emperor and even the empire. If anyone worships the beast in his image and receives a mark on his forehead or on his hand, he will also drink the wine of the wrath of God, the judgment of God. And then it talks about those who worship the beast and the image again later in that passage up there. If you identify, if you take his mark, if you become part of his band, if you compromise, you will be judged. But these are words of encouragement to these people. Words of encouragement and assurance that the evil powers, it looks now like they're in control. It looks like they're going to win. But judgment is coming. Indeed, judgment has already arrived. It's right around the corner. Judgment is here. So this leads us to see the book of Revelation is about the real worship war. And you got to think about this for a moment. The real worship war. It's not about style or generations. It's not about traditional or contemporary. And we have to get over this and put it behind us. The worship war is over who are you going to worship. I've got goosebumps. And with short sleeves, you might even see them. Okay, so who are you going to worship? People, the first service ought to be the biggest fans and supporters of the contemporary second service. And the people of the second service ought to be the biggest fans and supporters of the first service. John went up into heaven and saw this worship that was very strange to him. He would never do it that way. But the key, the war, is about who do we worship. Don't worship the beast or anything or anyone else. That's what the book of Revelation is telling us. It's telling us, worship the one true God. The greatest sin in the Bible. We've talked about this before. The greatest sin in the Bible, there's really no doubt about it, is idolatry. It's worshiping another God. We are called to worship the one true God of the Bible. And John Calvin has a great phrase in his Institutes when he says, the human heart is an idol factory. So we've got two problems. We've got the problem of culture, whether it's a political culture, but all cultures provide false gods that entice us to worship them. So we have a problem in our culture calling us to worship false gods, just like the first century Christians did. And we have a problem not just with culture, but in our own hearts. Every human being has a tendency, this is what it means to be fallen, has a proclivity to worship false gods. And we are called to worship only the one true God. We need, you might say, idol detectors. And when you go to your quiet time, I hope, as Tammy showed us earlier, every day, one of the major things you should be doing in your quiet time is looking for idols, for false gods in your life. And asking the question, Lord, am I worshiping you, the one true God? And am I worshiping you the way you truly are? Or am I making you in my image? Am I changing you so I can worship you comfortably? Am I worshiping the true God of the Bible? The book of Revelation shows us that while we're used to saying salvation by faith, and that's true, salvation is by worship. If you worship God, you're saved. And if you worship a false God, you're going to be judged. Judgment is coming, and it's coming to those who worship false gods. Faith and worship go together. Worship and faith go together. If you trust in the Lord, Lord means worship, it implies worship. If you trust in the Lord, you are going to worship him. And if you worship him, you're obviously going to trust him. Then, final piece in 14. We hear these words. Here is the perseverance of the saints who keep the commandments of God and their faith in Jesus. See, this is what the book of Revelation calls us to do. The perseverance of the saints. Christians endure, persevere under pressure, under persecution. Christians, true Christians, saints, persevere no matter what the circumstances, in good times and in bad times. And we keep the commandments of God and our faith in Jesus. Salvation is by faith. We trust in him. See, the book of Revelation is about worship. It's a call to worship. It's about judgment. It's delayed judgment, but it is coming. Don't let anything that's happening in the world make you think that it's not coming. It's coming, even though it looks like the forces of evil may be winning. It's about worship. It's about judgment. It's about perseverance. In the midst of suffering and even death, don't expect this to be easy. It wasn't easy for Jesus. It wasn't easy for John. Jesus, the Lamb who was slain, it's not going to be easy for us. We don't do the right thing if it's easy. Many predict there are persecution coming for followers of Jesus in the United States in days ahead. And if it does, we can't be babies about this. We can't whine and plead for special treatment. If pressure comes, then we've got to follow Jesus Christ no matter what the cost. We've got to worship him, even if it hurts, even if it leads us to death. 144,000 died in the book of Revelation, which just means a big number. 12 tribes times 12 apostles times a whole bunch. A lot of the people of God died And we remember that God is sovereign. He is sovereign. Even if it's tough for us now, everything's going to work out. He's in control. All things will work out right, and he will set everything right. Now, twice, in chapter 19 and in chapter 22 as the book ends, twice we have experiences like this, where this is the last one in 22. It says, I, John, I'm the one who heard and saw all these things, as he ends the book. And then he says, and when I heard and saw, I fell down to worship at the feet of an angel who showed me these things. I saw these magnificent things, and I heard these magnificent things, and I fell down to worship. And here's what the angel said. Don't do that. Don't do that. Get up. I am a fellow servant of yours and of your brothers, the prophets, and of those who keep the words of this book. Worship God. See, that's the theme of Revelation. That's what Revelation is about. Same exact words in 19:10. Don't do that. Worship God. That's Revelation. Don't do that. Don't worship anyone, anything else. Worship God. Worship God. Because the Lamb who has been slain is, as in 17 and 19 we hear, King of kings and Lord of lords. He's King of kings. He's Lord of lords. It may hurt now, but it's all going to work out. He's in control no matter what comes. No matter what came for the first century Christians, they worship God. And no matter what came to Christians through the years who really understood the book of Revelation, they worship God. And no matter what comes for us, if we hear the word of God in the book of Revelation, no matter what comes, we will worship God. Don't do that. Don't worship false gods. Worship him, the King of kings and the Lord of lords. Just bow. He must be saying something to you. You must be hearing. Listen carefully. What are idols you need to root out of your life? Don't do that. Worship God. Listen to him now.